So, in the Buddhist tradition, in the parable of the burning house in the White Lotus Sutra, the elder calls. He calls to the children. We hear, as it were, the voice of the divine. But the children take no notice. We ignore that call. And why? And the sutra says, or the Buddha says in the parable, and we can imagine him saying this with a smile, because they are absorbed in their games. We don't hear the call of the divine, because we are absorbed in our games. And this is the condition of most of us. We're absorbed in our games, absorbed, we may say, in the games people play. Games of all sorts of fascinating little games, psychological games, spiritual games, cultural games, social games, that we're playing at least much of the time. Little games of success, little games of prestige, little games of popularity, little ego trips, little power trips, and so on. We're busy playing these little games. So even though we hear the call of the divine, nothing less than that, the voice of the Buddha, Krishna's flute, we find our little games much more interesting, much more fascinating, much more absorbing. So we just go on playing them. And here at this point in the parable, the sutra adds some very perceptive touches. It says that the children at this stage run to and fro. They're not only playing their games, they're running to and fro. So what does this mean? It means that we're very restless. We can't stay anywhere for long. We can't stay with anything for long. We can't even spend much time with one game. We even want to change our games or change our partners in more ways than one. So we not only play games, but we go running backwards and forwards in desperation. So this is our situation. And also the sutra says the children glance at their father. They've heard him calling, and they're ignoring it, but still, as they run past, they just glance at him. Now what does this mean? This means that here we are, playing our little games, running to here and there, running to and fro, all restless, all excitable, all changeable. But we do give the odd glance in the direction of religion. Just the odd glance in the midst of our little games. And so on. So what is the elder to do? The children won't heed his call. They go on playing their little games. What is he to do? Force is out of the question. And the children fail to respond to a direct appeal. So the elder has got no alternative but to have recourse to a trick. That's the plain word for it, a trick. The technical Buddhist word is upaya kaushalya, skillful means. Now the elder in the parable knows that the children are very fond of toys. So he decides to get them out of the burning house by promising toys, especially the carts, you remember, the deer carts, goat carts, bullock carts. And these, with the help of which, or by promising which, he does get the children out of the burning house, are of course the vehicles or the yanas. And in the context of Buddhism, these different carts or vehicles stand for the three yanas about which we heard last week. That is to say, the Shravaka yana, Pratyeka Buddha yana, and the Bodhisattva yana, or they stand, that is to say, broadly speaking, for different spiritual ideals. For the Arahant ideal, the ideal of private enlightenment, and the Bodhisattva ideal. Or less technically, they stand for different formulations of the Buddha's teaching, or even, if you like, different sectarian forms of Buddhism. And these are adapted, these different forms are adapted to the needs of different temperaments, different dispositions. Now there are several perceptive touches here too. the sutra says, or the parable says, that hearing their father's promise of giving them all these marvellous toys, the children rush out eagerly. When he just says, come out, they don't take any notice. But when they're promised toys, toys of different kinds, I shall have this kind of toy, you will have that kind of toy, then out they come rushing. And this suggests that a subjective and sectarian approach, as it were, is, for many people, more attractive than an objective, more universal approach. And we often do find this in practice. We find that the more exclusive forms of religion often have a much stronger, more powerful emotional appeal. If you stand up and say, well, this is the truth, I've got the truth, my religion has got the truth, my teaching has got the truth, there's no truth anywhere else to be found. The truth is found only here. You're much more likely to get a following among ordinary people than if you say, well, look, this is how I see it. Other people see it differently, but we're maybe all right from our different points of view. Let's go forward together. If you say that sort of thing, you'll probably attract far fewer ordinary people. And we therefore find that those forms of Buddhism, which in the course of Buddhist history, down to the present, have become rather exclusive, at least exclusive for forms of Buddhism, they have, for many people at least, a stronger appeal. It's perhaps not without significance that the Mahayana in general, the most lofty and universal of all forms of Buddhism, has as such hardly any following in this country, perhaps only in our own movement to some extent. Now, even fewer people, we may say, are able to appreciate the much broader, much more universal concept of the higher evolution itself. This is a concept to which very few people, apparently, even when they hear it, can really rise. Now, the sutra also says, the parable also says, that in their eagerness to get the toys, to get their own particular cart, the children come out pushing one another. Now, what does this represent? They practice intolerance. You're all trying to get out of the same house, all trying to get to the same sort of toy, broadly speaking. So instead of going out, to, as it were, in order and side by side or hand in hand, you rush out only thinking of getting your toy, and you knock and jostle and push others who are doing the same thing and going in just the same direction. You may not, at least if you're a Buddhist, you may not actually persecute anybody, but you may not have very friendly, positive feelings towards other people following different paths. Now, once the children are all outside, what does the elder do? The elder gives each of them the very best kind of carriage. If you like, he gives them one and the same carriage, bigger and better than anything they could ever have imagined. So what does this mean? It means that once, or it means we may say, the closer people come to the goal, then the more do their paths converge. We start off in all sorts of ways. Start off on the process of the spiritual life or the higher evolution in all sorts of ways. Some start by being interested, say, in the fine arts or in music or poetry. Others may be interested, say, in social service. Others may come through meditation. Others because they're trying to resolve pressing psychological problems. Others again may be attracted through Zen. Others again attracted through, say, the Theravada. And this diversity is only natural because we start off with so many different temperaments, with so many different personal idiosyncrasies, and we're naturally attracted at the beginning by different things. But gradually a change takes place. As we get more and more deeply into our chosen subject, we understand it better. We understand its true nature. We become aware of what it is doing to us. We realize that we are changing, that we're developing through our participation in this particular subject, through our interest in it, our preoccupation with it. And we find that our idiosyncrasies of temperament, even those which led us to that particular subject, are gradually being resolved. And in the end we realize that art in all its forms, religion in all its forms, and so on, are all means for evolution, for the higher evolution of humanity. And that by participating in them, by participating in any of them, we ourselves are evolving, and that others too are evolving, even though their initial approach and their special preoccupation is different from our own. We realize that we're all evolving together. We're participating in the same general process, the process of the higher evolution of man, or the process of cosmic enlightenment. We may say that in terms of Buddhism, the parable of the burning house asserts that all the sects and schools of Buddhism merge ultimately into the one great way to enlightenment, or one great way to perfect Buddhahood. Or in more general terms, we may say that the parable asserts that all the higher cultural and spiritual interests of humanity merge into one great process of the higher evolution of man.